Today on The Grave Talks, Hell House Investigation, a conversation with John Smith. Investigating the dead and demonic can be extremely fascinating. It can also be extremely dangerous, especially when the investigators are inexperienced and sometimes reckless. Everyone can be young and dumb once. It's a matter of learning from those mistakes that show growth and experience. Today, we hear about an alarming and dark investigation that goes wrong several years ago, as John Smith recalls a former analysis and investigation of a location he calls Hell House.
So, growing up, I always was interested in that type of stuff. I was raised in a church my whole life, so definitely spirituality was a big thing for me. Mm-hmm. So I want to say when I was about 16 years old, a couple of my buddies got a camera together for making skate videos. His girlfriend at the time said there's something going on in her basement. So we said, whatever, let's leave the camera down here. We'll go out skating for a while. We'll come back and see if we catch anything. Went out skating for like a good hour and a half and come back. We were the only ones that were at the house the entire night. Her mom was off at work. And sure as heck, we go to check the camera, and down in the basement, you hear us leave, and probably about a good half hour into us being gone, you end up hearing the basement door start to jiggle like someone was trying to open it up. Mm-hmm. And you hear the door actually creak open, and you hear it shut, and you hear something like walk, and it sounded like walk up to the camera and like kind of took a deep breath into the camera. Mm-hmm. And that was all we had gotten, so we're like, okay, that was weird. Took it to my buddy who like is really good at computer stuff, and he analyzed it, and come to find out the deep breath was actually whatever that was going, hey. So it said hey into the camera, and we're like, holy crap, like that's insane. So showed that to her and her mom, and her mom was like, no way, no, like stop doing that crap here. And we're like, no, we gotta do it like one more time. So my buddy and I went down there again. This time we were with our other friend who ended up being our medium for a while. We end up going down the basement, hanging out down there, talking to whatever was there. And he's wearing my buddy who's a medium is wearing one of the button down flannel shirts. Mm-hmm. So at the end, you know, it's not connected. It's got the little flaps. So I'm just sitting there talking. I said, look, if there is anything here, I was like, just do something. I was like, go to my buddy. I was like, you know, push him, touch him. I was like, move, you know, an article of clothing, something, like just do something. And sure as hell, the bottom of his shirt starts lifting up, and he just throws his hands up, and he's like, I'm not doing that. And we're like all looking at it happening, and I was like, now let go of it, and it just stopped. And after that moment, that's when I was like, okay, there's something going on here, and there's definitely other things that are going on in the world.
Prior to that happening, I mean, what was your outlook on the world of the paranormal?
I mean, I always felt like there was something there, but I'd never really, like, I had witnessed weird things growing up, always, like, around the town where I grew up. So there was always that feeling of something else being there, but I never really fully experienced something that made me go, oh, yeah, There's something there, probably until about that night. And when that night happened, that's when I was like, okay, there's stuff out there.
That was, yeah.
I'm kind of interested now.
That was your moment of going, oh, especially, you know, when it's not like you're a small child. I'm assuming you were a bit older at this time.
I was 16.
Yeah. So you have that moment, and it's like, okay, it's like a whole new world is opened up of possibilities after a moment like that.
No.
Yeah, that would be very haunting. So tell me, where did your journey take you after that? After you had that experience, how did you begin to start investigating the paranormal? How did, you know, did you jump right into investigating, or did you have more experiences? Where did you go after that?
Nope. So pretty much from there, I just did a lot of research on stuff. I got a lot of books. I watched a lot of TV shows and documentaries just on like paranormal stuff. And I pretty much just indulged myself into that for a while. Mm-hmm. And then that's when I started to, I want to say it was like right when I was about to graduate high school was when I was like, okay, like, I'm going to try to do something with this. And I started, like, looking up certain locations out around town and all that. And me and my buddies, you know, on Friday nights when most kids my age were trying to go to parties, we're out there going into abandoned places trying to talk to dead people. So,
what sort of luck did you have trying to talk to dead people with your buddies at that age?
Well, and that's the one thing that, like, I always try to, like, push across to people is you're not going to go somewhere and right off the bat start getting things happening.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to tell you right now, most of the time when I go there and I go anywhere, honestly, it's you're talking and you're just talking to yourself and it's quiet. And the only thing really spooky is just the fact that you're in a dark, abandoned place.
Yeah.
That's really about the only spooky thing about it. Mm-hmm. But that's it. And you don't know till like later, you know, maybe on occasion something will happen that you'll hear or that you'll witness while you're there. But for the most part, it's usually the aftermath that you're going through, listening to the EVPs, rechecking all your photos and stuff like that. And a lot of the times it can take you going back to a place multiple times. Mm-hmm. Even that place, that Hell House place, when I first went there, I had gotten, you know, a couple of little pings of activity, enough to make me go, huh, mm-hmm. I want to go back again. And then it got a little bit more enhanced, and then the more I went and the more things we had done, and eventually that place was just insane. Overrun and, with just energy.
And that is the focus of our conversation today, is what's known as the Hell House. Let's shift over there a little bit and let's talk about what was your first hearing about this location that's known as the Hell House? What was your first pieces of information that came into your mind about it?
I was introduced to this house by a buddy of mine. He's another demonologist and investigator. His name is Jerome Allen, and he runs TRP, True Reality Paranormal. He introduced me to this place. He called Salem Mansion. Me and my group, we just called it Hell House, just because later on, the stuff that was going on there just ended up becoming crazy. But he introduced us to that place, and he's the one who kind of got me into the demonology studies and aspect. He knew a lot at the time when I met him, and he knows even more now, but he got me into the study. So mm-hmm. going there, we kind of ended up using that place as like a test subject.
Mm-hmm.
It was perfect. You know, we had gotten a little bit of EVP stuff, a couple of cool photos. It was out in the woods, so we figured, why not? This is a perfect place for us to go. We were young first starting out, me and my group, we were young starting out. So we're like, hell yeah, let's go. You know, we'll just start doing experiments there. And
so the location itself that is Hell House, is this a place that someone is still residing in? Is it an abandoned building?
Nope.
Paint the picture for me.
The 1800s. Okay. So back in the 1800s, there's a guy named Frederick C. Rowali who had moved out to Salem from New York, him and his family. He had built this big house that they had called the Big House, and just adjacent to that house was his partner's house. So up in upstate New York, they had invented this serpentine pump,
mm-hmm.
that would pump water and end up running electricity to a building. So he ended up bringing that knowledge out to Salem, built his house, and about, I want to say, a mile and a half off of his house, there's the pump house that had the water lines coming from the lake to the pump house, up to his house, and up to his partner's house. They were the only ones in Salem at the time that had electricity.
Okay.
So they pretty much brought that aspect, that whole thing, to Salem, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
His whole family lived out there for a while. One of his sons died when they went out to war. The other son had gotten an illness and died. The father ended up dying eventually within the house, and one of the other sons had ended up hanging himself in the house. And in the end, it was just the mother and the daughter that were left, and they ended up just leaving. And the house sat empty until about the 70s. And the 70s, it was taken over and tried to get re-renovated into apartments.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't work out too well, So they pretty much just stopped renovating on that. And then further down, they just started making whole new apartments down the way.
Why did the renovation fall apart? Do you know the answer to that?
From what I heard from the historian, she said that it's just every time they're trying to work on it, just things kept happening. Mm-hmm. Nothing could get done. And a lot of the workers just didn't really want to work more than like a week. They're just like fed up with the place. Mm-hmm. So there was definitely activity going on in there way before we even started dabbling in what we dabbled in that house.
So it just sat there then after that with nobody.
It
really
just sat there.
Okay.
Nobody walked into it. It was just there, you mm-hmm. know? But yeah, it's still there to this day. It's slowly coming down. Years of abandonment definitely started to take a toll on it.
Yeah. So tell me more about you kind of established the history. I mean, a lot of tragedy, death, yeah. Sadness, trauma, all that all surrounds this property. And then it sits abandoned, and I'm sure legends, sprung up around anything like that. How verified, let me ask you this, these stories that you're telling me about the family, about the death, about all of that, are these verified stories? Are these local legend? What is the, what is the factualness that you know about this?
The only way you can gain information on the house is through the town historian.
Okay.
You can try to look it up online, and you're really not going to find much about it.
But the town historian has shared what you've shared with me.
I had to track down the town historian
and
sit with her, and she showed me literally like all old photos, like things that I was like, oh, my God, like I've been trying to find like any other place. You could find old photos of everything about it.
Yeah.
She showed me everything. It was like, oh, my God, like finally I got to see.
Yeah.
You know, this entire place, like back when it was even functioning. And I was like, oh my God, like, this is awesome. Cause I'm like, oh my God, I've been in that room and I saw this in that room and this was going on in that room.
So who is
dragged down those stairs?
who is the individual or party that actually owns the house these days?
It's whoever owns the apartment complex.
Okay, so the property owner of the complex, it's like sitting on part of the property? Okay.
Yep, and I actually got permission from him like 10 years ago when I actually first started going in there all the time. I got permission from him to go in there. You know, I just pretty much said, hey, you know, this is what I'm doing in there.
Yeah.
I hope you don't mind, like, nothing crazy is going on. And just to let you know, like, we take responsibility for everything. Like, if we get hurt, it's on us and da-da-da-da and... We signed our little contract, and that was, so we were good.
I'm assuming it's one of those properties where it's just easier just to kind of let it rot away over in the corner versus spending money to tear it down.
Pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell me about the first time you set foot in what you call Hell House. What was that like? Paint the picture for us in detail, how you were feeling, what you were seeing, what was going on.
First time, like I said, my buddy Jerome introduced me to the place the first time he took me there. I was excited just like you are before any other hunt. You know, it's a new place. You're like, oh, man, this is cool. And when you pull up to the place, you're just automatically like, oh, man, this is this is going to be pretty cool. So we go in there and it was just, I don't know, it was awesome. It was just a new experience. It was great. And like I said, it was later on when you go home and you're re-listening to the audio. And you're going, wait a minute, nobody was around when that happened because you can hear it. So I think one of the first audios we had gotten, literally it sounded like a woman screaming, followed by some thuds. It sounded like somebody was getting murdered, but literally we end up leaving the recorder in the main room and we say, we're going down into the basement. No one's going to be up here, blah, 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 blah. And we go down to the basement. You hear us all go down, and then it's just quiet. For a good, I want to say 25 minutes, good just nothing.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you start to hear, like, a little bit of a thud, and a little louder thud, and then you hear, like, a woman kind of, like, screaming, a thud, a fainter scream, another thud, and then, like, a lower scream, then just one more big thud, and then that was it.
And this is
quiet
all
again.
This is all EVPs you're picking.
This is all EVPs. This is all stuff we picked up on a recorder. None of us heard anything. So we end up coming back upstairs. We announce our back upstairs, grab the recorder. We go put it into another location, keep going on with our night. And a few other EVPs came up that night. We had one saying, one of them was talking about, like, should we tell them? One was going, no. A couple of other EVPs were talking about warning us. Well, I think one of us actually said they heard it going, you're going to die. Like, crazy stuff we started to pick up in this place. And this was, like, way before, like I said, we even really did anything there.
Yeah.
So that right there, I was still living at home at the time. And I was like, oh, my God. I remember showing my mom. She's like, she was still like big in a church. She's like, nope. Like, don't even, I don't want to hear that crap. But really crazy stuff we were picking up.
I mean, obviously you're in a spooky place. And I mean, just the environment itself, you walk around a location like that, you're going to get, you know, vibes and whatnot, but they're not necessarily because you're picking up anything that's paranormal, just because of the aesthetics of where you're at. But were you feeling anything odd there other than just, you know, being in a creepy environment?
Not the first time. Like I say, I don't ever trust my first internal instinct. The only time I'll do that is if, like, say it's like a home investigation. If it's somebody's home, they call me saying, hey, I've got, you know, something weird going on in my house. That's probably when I'll go off with my first kind of gut instinct. But for the most part, in a new place, I kind of want to feel it out before I even start listening to what my body may tell you. You know, your mind is very strong. It could tell you that you're seeing and witnessing things that you're really not. You know, so I try to definitely go in and make sure I get a good feel of the place before I start really jumping the gun and going, okay, yeah, something's going on here.
Yeah. So you discover these things. You're hearing what sounds like someone being murdered. Mm-hmm. What's going through your mind and your team members' minds as you're hearing these things, as you're playing back these EVPs, other than, wow, that's pretty amazing?
Probably the first thing that came to my mind was, nobody got murdered here.
Sure.
So, like, why? Like, that was one thing that really was like, okay, no one got murdered here. Why are we hearing that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that was one thing that was just very odd for me. I was like, okay, that was strange. Even to this day, like, I never really looked into that aspect that much. I'm pretty sure if I tried to dive into it, I could figure something out about it. But I kind of let it go at that point. But it's just still to this day, like, we have no idea, like, even why that was on our EV, why that was even recorded. Like,
yeah,
we have no idea why that was even there.
Yeah, there's not a lot of context to having that be what shows up on your EVP.
Exactly.
So you have that experience. I'm assuming you're very curious, even more so, about this location now. Tell me what transpired after that first visit.
So after that, we pretty much went there. That became like our weekly ritual. I'd be hitting up my buddies at the end of the week going, hey, let's go to the mansion. And they're like, all right, let's go. So that'd be like our Friday night thing. We'd go up there. We'd, you know, we gear up and go do an investigation, just hang out there pretty much all night. Religiously. So we put it into a lot, not only work, but a lot of our own energy into this place. So now that's given it a lot more power to whatever's going on there.
Sure.
We ended up with Jerome. He told us about the Necronomicon, which is like the Book of the Dead, which is what I sent you.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people say, like, oh, you know, that book doesn't exist, or there's only two of them, and so people, we can recreate the text. It's really not that hard to do. The Necronomicon that I had, it was the book that had a lot of the rituals and the gates that you could do and practice to actually try to summon certain things. So we ended up doing the Murdoch gate and the Nurgle gate.
Okay, let's stop there for just a second. Because you're talking about it like, yeah, we got the book from the library, and it was right next to Winnie the Pooh.
Honestly, I got it from Amazon.
Here's the thing. You go into an investigation. I honestly, in all the years and the thousands of interviews and conversations that I've had with people, I've never had anybody say that on their investigation, they went and got that book and started trying to use it in the investigation. More so, it's someone who has used that book that is contacting someone for the investigators to come and help them. So this is an interesting dynamic here. What was going through your mind? What were you thinking that this is a good idea to dig that thing out and try and do anything with it in terms of investigating this haunting?
So basically, because like I said, I was young. I was just starting off. I was really getting interested into this. My entire life, I was raised in a church, so I knew literally everything you could ever possibly know about the Bible and things within the Bible. So I started kind of really just wanting to know more about the other side. So I started to dive into that type of research and looking into things like that. And just like curiosity killed the cat, you know, you want to know more about it as a person who's interested in this. You know, your whole main purpose is to go out there and try to find that is actually a real thing. So, yeah, it was kind of a not smart move, but I wanted to know if things would actually happen. So, never really hearing about people using this book, I said, yeah, whatever. We end up getting one.
Yeah. It's kind of the young and dumb excuse, and I get it. We've all been there. We've all have those. So that's kind of what you're saying the reasoning was for pulling that out.
Pretty much. Just young, dumb, and curious.
Okay.
I just really wanted to figure it out, and because I figured this is just this abandoned place, you know, out in the woods.
Yeah.
Can't do no harm, you know?
So you have the book. Go ahead. What happened?
We ended up drawing the gateways. We ended up reading from the book the whole passage, and honestly, we, you know, what you think would be right away, some craziness happens like in TV. Nothing happened.
Sure.
So we were like, okay, whatever. Kind of went off the night and didn't think nothing of it. And I want to say the next week I had to work, so like we couldn't go out that week to do an investigation. And I worked all the following week, so the next time I had off, I was like, hey, let's go. Like, I'm itching to go, like, investigate and check this fucking, you know, go back and check the place out. So we go there, just like normal. And honestly, things started feeling weird. Like, on the way there, like, we all just got really nervous. And, like, our hearts started racing, and we didn't. It was almost like before we got there, we were scared to even be there. And it was just like kind of really weird because we're here all the time. But like, we're scared. Like, our hearts are actually racing. Like, as we're there, like, okay, like, I'm kind of nervous right now. So we get to the house. We start unpacking. We're like, all right, walk up to the place, get in through the window. And just the minute you get in there, you can feel the tension. We're just, oof, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know if we want to be here right now. But we said, nope, let's just go, you know. Shook it off, went, set up, and went off our investigation. That night, we started hearing a lot more audio things going on within the house. Not even on EVP, but literally just in general, we heard a lot of bangings, a lot of tapping, scratchings. Things being moved around and couldn't really figure out where it was all coming from.
Mm-hmm.
We had actually caught a growl, like a really big, weird growl on the audio recorder that night. Really creepy stuff. And the odd part was when it came time to leave, I didn't want to leave. Like, I remember getting ready to go leave and I didn't want to. Like, it was weird how, like, all of us are scared on the way up. And then now on the way to leave, I don't want to. Like, I'm sitting there, I'm going, I kind of just want to stay here. And, like, I almost didn't care if everybody left me there by myself,
mm-hmm.
which was really weird because I'm like, I would never do that.
mm-hmm.
Like, so that's why it was just very odd to me. But I end up, you know, not listening to that and leaving. And got down the road and eventually felt better and relieved. And it was weird.
A lot to unpack there. Let's just kind of stop there for a moment. I want to ask you, what was the purpose initially that night of using the Necronomicon? How do you say it?
Necronomicon.
What was your purpose in using that? Like, what did you think you were benefiting from by using or trying to do some of the spells or whatever you want to call it in there prior to entering the building?
Mainly, we just honestly didn't think anything was going to happen out of it. Honestly, to be honest,
You said you picked some specific ones out. What were they about? What was the direction that they were supposed to go if they were to work for you?
So, I can't remember the Murdoch one, but I remember the Nurgle one because the Nurgle one is the one that actually gave us the problem. So the Nurgle god is he's the god of fire, the god of desert and the underworld. And he's also known in paganism.
Mm-hmm.
But then in Christianity, he was labeled as a demon and identified himself with Satan. So according to Colin DePlancy, who's a French demonologist, and I think it's Johan Weyer, I think his name is, he's a Dutch demonologist.
Mm-hmm.
But they wrote that before the 16th century, Nurgle was also depicted by the witches as the chief of Hell's, like, secret police, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much that he worked, like, right hand in hand with, you know, Beelzebub. So that was one of the ones that had actually given us a problem. And that is when I started really getting interested in demonology more, and kind of how to protect myself from certain things, mainly because before the really big incident happened, we had already started having crazy, like all the pictures I showed you, things happening. And I took all those to a professor of photography with the camera, with the pictures on the camera. And he's looking at those going like, I don't understand how, you know, that's possible. He's like, light doesn't do that. Light doesn't work in that type of way. Like, and I said, good. That's what I wanted to hear. Because if you told me that, oh, this is a this and then that and the other thing, I'd be like, okay, that's debunked as nothing. But for you to sit there as a person who is a college professor, who's definitely been around cameras and photos, to go, I have no idea what I'm looking at right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. That's like the best verification I could possibly get, you know?
Sure.
So we started getting a lot of things there, and that's when I really started doing a lot more work in the demonology and just started talking to some priests around town and just getting a little more information from them and just brushing up on some things. And I ended up learning just, you know, how to protect myself and my team for the most part against just about anything. I could never go do like a full on like possession of somebody. That's totally not in my league at all.
Yeah.
But I can totally, like, if you start getting like a evil or demonic entity starting to form within a house or in the beginning stages, I could definitely prevent any further things from happening, or at least attempt to.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is ever set in stone when it comes to this. That's what I try to tell people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a couple of house cleansing out here. So one woman had something really evil going on in her house, very dark, and I end up getting rid of that and shutting it out. But I told her too, I said, you know, you can't think about this. You can't feed into anything that happens from here on out. I said, because as I shut the door, I said, that thing's always going to be trying to knock back in. I said, the minute you keep trying to pick at it, you're weakening that gate and that door.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually it's going to become thin enough for him to bust back through and try to come in. So I always tell people, you know, once I'm done doing my job, I said, you got to continue on doing what you have to do and make sure you don't feed into anything, because it's always going to try to work its way back in.
Do you think you unleashed something into that house or around yourself by using the book that night?
Definitely. I mean, like I said, we didn't think it was going to work. And when we ended up going back, I want to say probably by like the third The third time we went back after that night of reading that book is when we started realizing there's some crazy stuff going on. And it's because I had my first incident there. So pretty much we're sitting down on the floor and I'm just trying to talk to whatever's in there. Then I start aiming my attention more at what we had tried to summon from the gateway. I tried talking to that. And I pretty much said, hey, you know what? I'm here. I'm, you know, try to use me. I want to know what's going on. I want you to talk to me, communicate, use me, whatever you got to do. And that's when I felt it. I started feeling this weird feeling of just tiredness. My entire body was just drained. I had no energy. I started feeling sick to my stomach. And, like, my team's kind of like, should we leave? I'm going, no, I don't want to leave. Like, it's just weird. I didn't feel good. I felt sick. And yeah. I remember, like, almost nodding out. And all of a sudden, it was just gone. And I was like, okay, whoa, like, that was weird. Like, all of a sudden, I'm feeling all awake. And I'm like, okay, now, like, what's going on? But then I got, like, kind of upset. Because I was like, man, I feel like we almost had contact with something. You know, the whole point of this is to try to get contact. Like, I want to, you know, get some good stuff to go on. I said, we had had a washer get kicked when we were there one time. A few other big events happening. I was like, but this is like, we wanted to get the big deal, like the big daddy, some proof going on. Mm-hmm. So I said, we were close. I was like, let's try it again. So I end up going into the gateway, kind of standing there for a minute. And I was like, you know what? Let me just sit in here and I'm going to try to talk to it. So I do that. And I start sitting there. I'm talking to try whatever. And all of a sudden I feel it again. That feeling of just sick, drained, no energy. And next thing you know, I'm out. I mean, I'm on the floor and it's a dirty floor and I'm face down, just in it, out cold. And all I remember is this feeling of just being in dark. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't really speak, but like I wasn't gasping. Like it was weird. It was just, I couldn't do anything. I was just trapped in this nothingness. And it was the weirdest thing ever because I could still hear everything going on around me. But it was just this nothingness that I was trapped in. And no matter what I couldn't get out of it. And then eventually, I don't know what happened. I just ended up breaking out of it and coming to. And my buddies are like, dude, like, what happened? And I was like, I have no idea. Like, I'm like literally laying next to a candle, like almost like lighting myself on fire. And I'm like, holy crap. Like, I don't know. Like, it was weird. And at that point, that's when I said, okay, I definitely need to do what I got to do to keep me and everybody safe. So that's when I end up really digging in deep and learning how to protect very, very well against all this type of stuff. And from that point on, we went in there completely protected, just ready to go. And a lot of the activity towards us had stopped. We were still getting a lot, like on the EVPs and in pictures and stuff. But none of us really got fully attacked until like Halloween night of 2010.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with John Smith about the Hell House investigation. In part two, what does John think happened to him when he passed out inside the Hell House? How did John and his team get attacked on Halloween night of 2010? Did John feel reckless when his team went out of their way to attempt to draw more energy and spirits from the house before that Halloween investigation? And what lessons did John and his team learn after their Hell House investigation? All of that and more in part two of our conversation. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. Sign up to be one at patreon.com/thegravetalks or go to thegravetalks.com and click Become a Gravekeeper. Your support is what keeps us on the air. We cannot do this program without you. You'll get access to part two of this episode and all of our episodes, literally hundreds of them, waiting for you to binge away on in their entirety. Check it out, patreon.com/thegravetalks or thegravetalks.com and click Become a Gravekeeper. All episodes commercial free. You also get access to our advanced episodes weeks before the release to the public. We thank you for your support in advance. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.